Good morning. Happy Thursday, one and all. It is Kale and Company live here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. A delight to have you along with us. And as always, we are presented by Northeast Eldon Dental with individual and family plans designed to fit your lifestyle. Learn more and find your plan at DeltaDentalCoversMe.com. I do want to remind you that tomorrow, our weekly Friday Fun Bunch will take place. And once again, as was the case last week, we will have a Facebook Live presentation. And we had some great response last week. So tell your friends and neighbors that you can not only listen to, but watch the show tomorrow morning, starting a little after 8 o'clock. So all you have to do is log on to the WKXL NH Talk Radio Facebook page, and you will find us. And you'll hear exactly what takes place on the radio, but perhaps more importantly to some, what takes place during the breaks. A little behind-the-scenes stuff for you on our Facebook Live presentation. So that will be tomorrow between just a little after 8 and 9 o'clock a.m. And then if you miss it, I am sure that the powers that be that have a lot more technical expertise than I do here at WKXL will post it on the WKXL Facebook page. So if you can't see it live, you can tune in later on and laugh at us then. All right. Last night, kind of a mixed bag in terms of Boston area sports. I thought the Boston Bruins played a terrific game last night, pretty much from start to finish. And they won 4-2 over the Toronto Maple Leafs in Toronto. And Brad Marchand, who had, for him, been in kind of a slump, kind of lethargic for the last month or so. But he was not lethargic, especially in the third period last night when he scored a pair of goals, including the game winner at 11:53 of the third period to put the Bees ahead to stay. Marchand had two goals. One was an empty netter and an assist in that third period of play, and the Bees prevailed 4-2. And Game 4 will be played on Saturday night in Toronto. Jeremy Swayman made 28 saves in goal for Boston. And the Bruins, as they did all season long, are using a goaltender platoon where one game Jeremy Swayman will be between the pipes. The next game, Linus Ullmark will be between the pipes. Now, the Bruins, both games they've won in this series have been with Jeremy Swayman between the pipes, so some are getting restless. They say, well, keep Swayman in. He's winning. But I think and I hope that head coach Jim Montgomery continues with the platoon because Linus Ullmark is an outstanding goaltender as well. So I think you'll see Linus between the pipes in Game 4. And Jim Montgomery will go with the platoon. He did not last season. He did it all year, but not in the playoffs last year, and the Bruins lost in the first round. So they have two outstanding goaltenders. I mean, that's one of the strengths of this Bruins team, is their goaltending. So take advantage of both of them so that they, you know, the playoffs are a grind. Hopefully the Bruins will go through four rounds and ultimately win a Stanley Cup, and I think they can do it with the goaltending and the other, you know, components that they have. But their goaltending is as good, in my opinion anyway, as anyone's in the NHL. So take full advantage of it. I mean, I know it's not a normal thing to platoon goaltenders, well, period. Usually a team has one, you know, regular goaltender that will play 60 games and another guy that will play 22 or, you know, a split like that. But the Bruins have a rotation. They have a platoon. They did it last season. They did it all this regular season. And it worked. I mean, the Bruins had the best record in the league last year during the regular season, working the goaltender platoon. This year, they did the same thing, had one of the best records in the league. So why change it in the postseason? I know it's not normal, but it's okay. It's okay, folks, to do something different. Celtics did something different last night. They didn't play any defense. They decided to go out there and not contest virtually any Miami three-pointers. What was up with that? I mean, not that Miami coming in was one of the great three-point shooting teams of all time, but as it turned out, they set a franchise record last night with 23 three-pointers, and they beat the Celtics at the Garden 111-101, something no one thought would happen, especially the Celtics. I mean, this is an undermanned Miami team. Undermanned in the sense that they're missing arguably two of their top four players in Jimmy Butler and former Celtic scary Terry Rozier. So they're missing two key players. Their ace in the hole is they have, I think, unquestionably one of the top two or three head coaches in the NBA in Eric Spoelstra. He is right up there. Most people consider him the best coach in the NBA, and he could well be. I like Tom Thibodeau of the Knicks. I think he's right up there. But Celtics were out-coached and out-hustled, outplayed in every aspect of the game last night. It was not a pretty sight. And Miami winning the game, evening the series, going back to South Beach. Game three will be played on Saturday evening in Miami. And why those three-point shots were not contested better than they were? I mean, the Celtics came out flat last night and pretty much stayed that way for the rest of the night. It was a close game at halftime. And I think there is some occasions when the Celtics take the court and think they just have to show up and they're going to beat their opponent, especially when that opponent is missing two key players like Miami is. So, yeah, we can just show up and, you know, play a little half-hearted defense. But it doesn't work. Doesn't work when you have the opponent with a head coach like Eric Spoelstra. It might work in some cases, but when you have a master tactician like Eric Spoelstra pulling the strings, diagramming the strategy, you know, he's one of the best, if not the best current coach in the NBA. And of course you get Pat Riley, the Pat Riley factor too. He had plenty of FaceTime on camera last night from the Garden. And he's, you know, when it comes to NBA coaching and strategy and knowledge and all that stuff, Pat Riley is right up there. So when you get the combination of Eric Spoelstra and Pat Riley working against you, then no matter what, no matter how undermanned they may be, they are going to be tough. They're going to be tough. No doubt about it. And the Celtics should know that because it wasn't it Miami that eliminated the Celtics last year from the postseason? The answer is yes, it was. And at that point, they had Jimmy Butler, who is a playoff phenom. And he's not playing right now. I don't know if he will be back for Miami in this series. And hopefully it's the only series Miami plays. But the Celtics will have a lot to say about that. It was a half-hearted effort last night. And, you know, I know Joe Mazzulla is going to be grilled by fans and media. And, you know, he deserves some of the blame, the coach. But you know what? you got to blame the players, too. You got to put the blame on the players for lack of effort. They're supposed to be professionals. This is the playoffs, folks. Celtics, in their last 82 games at home, regular season, 69-13 at home during the regular season, in their last 82 games at home, covering two seasons. Playoffs, last two seasons, 10-13. What does that tell you? We'll take a break. Kale and Company right here, WKXL. Of course, Slim will have more on the sports scene. The Sports Machine coming up right after 10 o'clock today, right here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. We are proudly presented by Northeast Delta Dental, and we will be right back. Welcome back. Kale and Company live here on WKXL. If you like historic novels, well, stay tuned. Right after our next break, we will be welcoming to the show Tim Wendell, who has just written a book called Rebel Falls. I don't even think it's out yet. I don't even think it's out on the market, but we have Tim, and a prolific author, and he is going to be discussing Rebel Falls, and it's a book about the Civil War, based, now remember, this is a novel, historic novel, Confederates planning to seize the USS Michigan on Lake Erie and bombard Buffalo, Cleveland, and other northern cities. So there you go. That'll be the second half of the program today. I did not mention in the first part of the program today that the, I would say, surprising Boston Red Sox, given the fact that they have been beset by so many injuries early in the season. Red Sox won last night. They beat, right now, the best team in baseball, the Cleveland Guardians, 8-0 in Cleveland. Red Sox have performed much better on the road this year than they have at home. But catcher Connor Wong, he belted a pair of home runs last night, drove in three. Raffy Devers back in the lineup, four hits and an RBI. And Willier Abreu, hottest hitter on the team, four hits and an RBI. And the Sox starter, get ready for this one, Cooper Criswell. Who? Cooper Criswell went five scoreless innings. You know, the Red Sox have the best earned run average in baseball. Best pitching staff, statistically anyway, in baseball right now, which nobody thought would be the case. I mean, I know it's early, still very early in the season. And, you know, you don't want to get your hopes up too high, but, you know, they seem to be playing better defensively than they did at home in particular. And they're getting some timely hitting and some very, very good pitching, which really has been the strength of the team in the early going. In the early going, I stress. Two teams, the Red Sox and the Guardians. You know, I'm getting more used to saying that now. The Cleveland Guardians. Not that I like it, but that's the name of the team. Cleveland Guardians. And they will play the rubber game, as they say, of the series this afternoon, just after 1 o'clock in Cleveland, Ohio. Which to me, I'll tell you, Cleveland is one of two major cities in the country which I would call underrated. Now, there may be more. I'm sure there are more. But the two that come immediately to mind, and I've spent some time in both of them, actually more in Cleveland than the other one I'm about to tell you about. But Cleveland and Pittsburgh are two of the most underrated cities in the country. I mean, you know, Cleveland for years, they call it the mistake by the lake, I know. And, you know, Pittsburgh, people make fun of Pittsburgh. But have you been there? Wonderful cities. Wonderful cities. And, you know, they're only like two and a half hours apart driving So, you know, on one trip, you could hit both of them, which would not be a bad idea. They both have outstanding baseball stadiums, Pittsburgh PNC Park, overlooking the bridges, overlooking the rivers in Pittsburgh. Wonderful spot. Pittsburgh has a lot going for it. And Cleveland, I would rank PNC Park in Pittsburgh above Progressive Field in Cleveland, but it's not bad. It's been pretty much empty the last two nights when the Red Sox and the Guardians, because the weather in Cleveland has been miserable, but they've played the games. But Cleveland has a lot going for it as well in terms of they have the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could spend a lot of time at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They have a great aerospace and science museum in Cleveland. And they just, the flats in Cleveland, it's an area where there are restaurants and bars and all kinds of entertainment. Cleveland and Pittsburgh, in my mind, the two most underrated cities in the country, bar none. Except if it might be Pittsfield, New Hampshire. Because Pittsfield, New Hampshire has a great theater. And tomorrow night, our producer here at WKXL, Andrew Gibson, will be at the Pittsfield Playhouse tomorrow night. What do they call it, Andrew?
So the Scenic Theater.
Scenic Theater. Yes, I couldn't come up with a name. Scenic Theater. And it's great. I mean, it's a relatively small space, but that's good because
it's a historic theater too.
Yes, it is. Yeah. And they've done a lot of work on it over the years. And it's great. And I have seen one production there, and that was one that starred Andrew Gibson, Jekyll and Hyde. And tomorrow, Andrew, remind the folks what's going to take place starting tomorrow.
So tomorrow night, we open up with Getting Away with Murder. And it's the only straight show, non-musical, written co-written by Stephen Sondheim. And it is a dark comedy, not for kids.
Not for kids.
It's an adult show. Leave the kiddos at home. But it is a murder mystery slash dark comedy involving the tale of seven patients at a psychologist's office, and the doctor is permanently unavailable.
Wow, permanently unavailable. Okay, we know doctors that have been unavailable and late for appointments, but this guy is permanently unavailable.
Right.
So it sounds great, and folks, there are tickets left, but I know they're going rapidly. It's going to be tomorrow night and Saturday night of this weekend, and then next weekend, Andrew, Friday and Saturday evenings and Sunday
matinee. Yep.
Yep, great. So five performances. You won't want to miss it if you've never been to the Scenic Theater in Pittsfield. I would recommend that this would be the time to go. And
PittsfieldPlayers.org.
That's where you go tickets. For tickets and more information. And it's going to be a terrific run. Just five shows. It was on Broadway, but it didn't run very long.
No, it had a very short run on Broadway. But the story is very funny. Well, again, darkly funny, but it's well written. I just don't think that the execution was done very well in its original run.
So we
found ways around some of the more complicated bits to make it more accessible to audiences.
All right, very good, and it will start tomorrow night. So, Andrew, we wish you well and the entire cast and crew.
Thank you.
It's going to be a great 5 days and nights, or 4 nights and 1 day of theater at the Scenic Theater in Pittsfield. So get your tickets in advance. You won't want to show up and be shut out. So get them because they are going very rapidly. So, and also, this weekend, Sunday, at the Bank of New Hampshire stage, New Hampshire Opera Idol, a competition that's been going on, and our audience for that show on Sunday afternoon, starting at 3 o'clock, will be choosing the winners. It's New Hampshire Opera Idol this weekend, and it's at the Bank of New Hampshire stage. It's at the Canton Room, upstairs at the Bank of New Hampshire stage, presented by, among others, WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. So going to be a great event. It is Sunday, this Sunday at 3 p.m. Doors will open at 2:30, and you can book your tickets for that event at www.ccanh.com, ccanh.com, or call 603-225-1111, 225-1111, and that'll be Sunday afternoon starting at 3 o'clock. And, of course, tonight, for sports fans, big, big night. We had a great discussion yesterday with Tom King of the Nashua Telegraph. It's the NFL Draft, which will begin tonight and continue tonight, tomorrow, Saturday. Seems like it goes on forever. But it appears that the Bears will draft Caleb Williams, number one in the draft. The speculation is Jaden Daniels will go to Washington, and the third pick to your New England Patriots. And it's expected by some of the experts that they will draft North Carolina quarterback Derek May. Drake May out of North Carolina. We'll see how it plays out. It's all on ABC tonight. Prime time. All right. Back with more. We'll talk about a new book. It's called, well, it's from a great author, Tim Wendell. It's called Rebel Falls, and we'll talk about that right after these words. Kale & Company Live, WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com, presented by Northeast Delta Dental. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Kale & Company Live here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. We are presented by Northeast Delta Dental. And our guest on this portion of the program is Tim Wendell. Tim, good morning to you.
Good morning, Ken. How are you?
I am doing great. Great to have you with us. Tim is a writer in residence at Johns Hopkins University and the author of Summer of 68, great baseball book, Cancer Crossings, High Heat, and the historical novels Castro's Curveball and its sequel Escape from Castro's Cuba. Tim has appeared on PBS, CNN, ESPN, NPR, and is also the narrator of several audiobooks as well. But today he's appearing on WKXL, and Tim, a delight to have you along with us. And Tim's latest book is Rebel Falls, and is it out yet?
Yes, it's just coming out, Ken. It's shipping as we speak. So, you know, look out there for the Pony Express. It's coming.
Tim, tell us about what inspired this book. It's based, for our audience's sake, based on the Confederates' plan to seize the USS Michigan on Lake Erie and bombard Buffalo, Cleveland, and other northern cities.
Very much. And this is all based on true events, Ken. It's funny. I love looking at endnotes. And you know, not so much footnotes, but endnotes at the back of the book. But yeah. I stumbled across these two guys, named John Yates Bell and Bennett Burley. And I grew up near Niagara Falls, and I'm hearing about this plot they had to seize the Michigan. And the Michigan, people need to remember, was the only warship left on the Great Lakes in, say, the fall of 1864, on the eve of the presidential election. Lincoln's running for re-election. And as you say, their plan was to seize this, bombard these cities, even free some Confederate prisoners in Johnson Island near Sandusky. And I'm going, I've never heard of this. This is crazy. And I got deeper into it and found that they're only mentioned in passing in Doris Kearns Goodwin's Team of Rivals a little bit and Carl Sandburg's Lincoln. And so I was off, and I was doing research on both of those guys. And then, in a sense, brought in what the Union was trying to do to counter that with a network of spies of their own based on a woman protagonist, Lori Chase, who's the hero of Rebel Falls.
And tell us a little bit more about Rory Chase, your protagonist in the book. Describe her and the role that she plays.
Kind of a tomboy. Very much wanted to be a part of the war effort on the Union side, very much a patriot. She's also one reason, she's a composite of a couple of different characters, one being Emma Edmonds, who actually joined the 2nd Battalion out of Michigan, actually fought with at Bull Run and several other places, disguised herself as a man. There's another woman, Paula Cushman, who was actually buried in her Union uniform in the Presidio in San Francisco. Again, you know, we kind of forget the role women played often during the Civil War. So that becomes the basis for Rory. But I took it a step farther. I wanted to get inside, say, the Seward family, which was based in Auburn, New York, where Rory Chase eventually comes from. And why the Sewards? William Seward was Secretary of State in 1864. In my mind, the second most powerful man behind Lincoln in the North. And he's the one in Rebel Falls who sets up the spy network to go against the Confederate spies who are very much entrenched along our border, stretching from the Maritimes all the way to Detroit for many years leading up to the end of the war.
It's a fascinating story, and tell us more about the folks you talked about initially, John Yates Beall and Bennett Burley.
Oh, I'd be happy to. These guys are they're kind of, Ken, I think, and not to go too Shakespearean on you, but they're kind of like the Rosencrantz and Guildenstern of maybe the Civil War. They kind of pop up, and you think, wow, they're going to have this big major role, then they kind of disappear. But John Yates Beall was, he was very much a Southern sympathizer. He went to University of Virginia. He was a law school student. He had actually been a pirate in Chesapeake Bay for the Confederate side. But he ends up in Canada and ends up trying to seize the USS Michigan, which again is pretty much the major backstory for Rebel Falls. He's very much pro-South. His partner in crime here, so to speak, is a guy named Bennett Burley, who actually came over as a soldier for hire from Scotland. I mean, we kind of forget that in the 1860s, the Civil War was kind of this light that drew off these moths and, you know, people from around the world that made them anything else better to do. And one of them was actually Bennett Burley. And I went over to London, did some major research on him. He's got a major file in the London Library there. And he escapes at the end of the war. And ironically, in these twists that only history has, becomes like the main foreign correspondent, war correspondent for the London Daily Telegraph. And he reinvents himself, even changes the spelling of his last name just a tad. So it's these kind of improbable duo that nearly sees the Michigan. And if they'd done so, I'm of the opinion that Lincoln would not have won re-election. People would just said, we're done with this. What, we've got now another front opening up in this long war? We're done. And so it's amazing when you kind of sift through things and maybe just one or two things turn your head, you know, the stories you can find kind of in the archives.
Boy, I guess so. And so what exactly were the Confederates trying to accomplish?
They were pretty much going to try to take control of the Michigan, which was iron-hulled boat, great weaponry on it, 30-pound gun. I mean, nothing's going to compete with this thing because everything else is along the Atlantic seaboard at that point. We're blockading the South, and that's where all pretty much the major crafts had gone. And in a sense, they were playing off of not only trying to free Confederate prisoners, but also, in a sense, working on this war fatigue that had built up in the North. You know, you had, by that point, what we called copperheads at that point, people that were ready to make peace with the South. Okay, let them have their own country. Let them keep slavery. And they were pretty much looking to turn on public opinion and create an international incident or two that would do that. And then also, you got to remember at this point, England, other powers in Europe were looking at what was going on in the Civil War and were going, will we be a power broker here? Do we want to come in? And Bennett and Burley were very much, Bennett Burley and John Yates Beall were very much trying to bring that aspect into it too. Barbara Foreman did a great nonfiction book called A World on Fire and how close we came to the First World War pretty much with the spark being our American Civil War. And in a sense, that would have been great with the South, because that would have meant they would have existed and continued on as a nation.
Our guest is Tim Wendel, and he has written a number of books over the years. His latest is Rebel Falls, which we are talking about today. What role did the Underground Railroad play in Rebel Falls?
This is so much fun, Ken, because, as I said, I grew up near Niagara Falls, and I knew kind of the aspect of the Underground Railroad. There was a place in Niagara Falls called the Cataract House Hotel. One of the most luxurious hotels of the time, 1850s, 1860s. But it was also the last stopping off point for an escaped slaves, people trying to free themselves before they could get to Canada. Canada was the promised land. You had to get across the Niagara River, and then you'd be safe. And the wait staff at the Cataract House was pivotal often in this. The waitstaff in the dining room was pretty much all escaped slaves themselves. And they would come up, and often before the war, the plantation owners and such, which I find mind-boggling, would come to Niagara Falls. Yes, got to see the sights, you know, one of the wonders of the world. And they would stay at the Cataract House. And during that time, potentially one of the waitstaff would come up to one of the slaves that the plantation owners had brought along with them and say, "Do you want to escape? You want to reach freedom?" And you had to decide right then. It wasn't like, "Well, I'll think about it. Check with me tomorrow." And the wait staff at the Cataract Hotel had elaborate final mechanisms to get them to Canada. The main one being 209 steps, a staircase, wooden staircase, that I uncovered in my research right in the shadow of the falls on the American side, right there by Prospect Point. And they would take them down, and there'd always be a rowboat waiting with somebody who knew the currents well enough to row them across the Niagara River at that point. And anybody who's been to Niagara Falls, you know, think about maybe what you saw from Cave of the Winds or riding Maid of the Mist. Whew, I don't know if I'd want to be rowing across that, but they did it time and time again.
Tim, stay with us, if you would, for just a couple of minutes. We have to take a quick break, and then we'll be back to talk more about Rebel Falls. Tim Wendel's new book just out there. You can get it on Amazon and wherever you buy your books these days. And Tim, hold on, and we'll be right back. Kale and Company continues right here, WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. We are presented by Northeast Delta Dental. Welcome back, Kale and Company Live here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com, chatting with Tim Wendel today, author of Rebel Falls. And Tim, thanks for staying with us. How much, you know, it must have been years of research that went into this book. You know, I know the Civil War itself was very complex and sometimes difficult to understand. So what? How much research was put into this? I know you said you went to London.
Yeah, maybe more than I can remember, Ted. But I think, as you say, the Civil War is just layer upon layer. And as has been said, it's easily our most complicated of wars. But, you know, a great deal of research. One of the things that helped out a great deal was finding a memoir of John H. Bell, one of the major Southern, you know, spies in Rebel Falls. I uncovered that in the library at Cornell, of all places, in Ithaca. But I guess what keeps you going when you're doing, at least for me, when I'm doing a fair amount of research on a project, is if I keep discovering things that I went, "Oh, I didn't know that," or "That runs counter to what I thought." And one of the things that time and again did that for me was just our relationship with Canada. And in a sense, you know, actually, I'm married a Canadian, so it's like I love Canada. You know, so we kind of think of it as, you know, hockey and, you know, kind of, you know, innocent and it's unguarded border and such. But in the 1860s, when the Civil War was going on, it was just a haven for spies and intrigue. And just the other day, came across the fact that when they, John Wilkes Booth, who assassinates Lincoln, was very much up in Canada along the border especially in Montreal in those years. And when they, after they shot Booth and they found him in that barn in Virginia, they're emptying his pocket. And one of the things they find is a banknote from a bank in Montreal. And you're going, wow. And so, in a sense, that's what, and in very many ways, if you talk to Canadian historians, they say our Civil War, in a sense, helped make them a country. Because if we had lost, we being in the North, the Civil War, probably our attention would have turned to Canada and potentially trying to take that over. So, you know, that I just find, you know, unbelievable. And it allowed me to work in my love and, in a sense, growing up near Niagara Falls, which I feel is one of the most beautiful and yet kind of forgotten places in the world. Yeah. It's just a place of extreme.
It is a beautiful spot. If folks haven't been there, you have to check it out. It's not that far, folks. You can drive there in about 9 hours from here. So, but it's great. It's well worth it. And then, you know, go into Canada as well. I mean, you can go both sides of the falls and then take a little trip up to Toronto or wherever you want to go.
They end up over on the Canadian side. It's still there. There's a place called the Clifton House Hotel, which was a haven for rebel spies during the Civil War. So, you know, go hang out in the lobby and, I don't know, maybe Bennett Burley will go walking by.
It's still there, huh? The Clifton, huh? You know, it's funny because, not funny, but your book brings to light the fact that, you know, the Civil War was not just a Southern war. A lot of people think of it that way.
No. I mean, obviously the major battles, except maybe Gettysburg and alike, were below the Mason-Dixon line. But, you know, I think this is one thing we kind of mistake maybe with conflicts and wars. It's like, okay, it's just there. It's like in that border. It's surrounded by that on the map. As I was saying, it swirled everywhere, you know, during the 1860s, so much so that Europe was very interested, looking to see what kind of advantage they could get. Maybe we support the South. Maybe we support the North. At one point, England almost came in as kind of a power broker, maybe a little bit similar to what, you know, the U.S. has done in other parts of the world more recently, and said, you know, we'll broker the peace. You know, we're the big power in the world. We'll do it. And so I think at times, again, that's something that's amazing about sometimes these conflicts is how far out they can impact people and events.
Tim, what would you like the readers to take away from this book?
That it's a page-turner. That I think it's got a really fun plot. Hopefully they've got some characters I can identify with. And just that juxtaposition of so much of it is taking place, as we were just talking about, Ken, in Niagara Falls, this place of beauty, and yet it holds so many secrets or mysteries, and one of them being that it nearly was the tipping point in the last couple months of the Civil War.
Well, you've done some great work over the years, and this certainly adds to it. Rebel Falls is the name of the book, and as I mentioned in our opening, you wrote a terrific book, and I said in the summer of 68, a baseball book. It's a lot more than that, folks. I mean, baseball is certainly in there, but it's a terrific book in that it talks about, baseball, and it talks about the events that were going on in this country at that time, and it intertwines them just beautifully.
Oh, thank you, Ken. And I think in some ways, Rebel Falls, summer 68 may seem, you know, worlds apart, but they kind of go together because both of them, at least in some basic level, are about what acts or individuals or moments held the country together. And in the course of, you know, of course, in summer of 68, it's that epic World Series between the Detroit Tigers, St. Louis Cardinals, other events. And Rebel Falls, it's the courage of a couple people that derail this very audacious, even amazing plot to kind of flip things as it seems like the war is winding down. So I don't know. Sometimes my stuff kind of goes together.
And then another baseball book you have is High Heat, and you know that's a good one too. I tell you, you write such diverse material. What are you working on now?
Well, I may stay on the border with British Canada. We'll see how this goes. Again, as you can tell, I love uncovering moments in history. And a couple years after the Civil War has ended, and I never heard this, I'm going to Ireland in the fall to tease this out a little bit more, but there was a group called the Fenians, and the Fenians invaded Canada. Many of them were Civil War vets from the northern side, and their pretense was, let's take part of Canada, mostly Ontario, around Hamilton, outside of Toronto at that point in time, and we'll hold it ransom. And we'll get back part of Ireland. We'll do a deal with England. This is nuts, but this is real life stuff.
Wow. And you are uncovering all of it for us, Tim Wendell. And we appreciate the time that you have spent with us this morning. We really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure, Ken. Always great to be on with you.
All right. Tim Wendell. And the new book is Rebel Falls. It's out there now, along with his other books that we mentioned. And if you're a baseball fan, you'll love the baseball-oriented books that he has written as well, The Summer of 68 and High Heat. But he has others out there on the market. Very prolific author, great guy, and so glad that he could join us today here on Kale & Company Live at WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Today, Thursday, April 25th, happens to be Love Your Thighs Day. Love Your Thighs Day. It's also National Crayola Day, so bring out those crayons, folks. You know, you're never too old to color. You know, really, it's good therapy sometimes to bring out those coloring books and the crayons and color. Good therapy. National Plumbers Day. We appreciate all that the plumbers do out there. National Teach Your Children to Save Day. I wish, and I had great parents. I don't want you to take this the wrong way. I had terrific parents, but they never taught me to be very thrifty. I will say that. But at any rate, it is National Teach Your Children to Save Day. It's also National Telephone Day, Red Hat Society Day, World Penguin Day, and Take Our Daughters and Sons to Work Day. And I did that a couple of times when my kids were younger. I would, you know, if they wanted, I would take my daughters to work today. But they're a little bit old for that, I guess, and they have their own careers. They could take me to work, perhaps. But those are the days being commemorated today. And birthdays, as far as birthdays are concerned, on this April the 25th, Al Pacino, great, great actor. I saw him once, honestly, on stage in New York in the Basic Training of Pablo Hummel, I believe the show was. And it was a very intense show, and we were sitting very close, and you could see the the spit coming out of Al Pacino's mouth. We were so close. But Al Pacino, great, great actor, 84 today, and Talia Shire, who was in all the Godfather movies. She was played Connie Corleone in the Godfather trilogy. And, of course, she was Adrian Balboa in the Rocky series. What a career. Tanya Shire, 78 years old today. Also the brother of Francis Ford Coppola and the aunt of Nicolas Cage. What a life. What a life. All right. We have quite a life here at WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. We have some great programming on the way. And don't forget Slim, Sports Machine. He'll have a lot to say about Celtics and Bruins last night. No doubt about that. And folks, remember to always look on the bright side of life. We are presented by Northeast Delta Dental.